Powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN, it is Season 5, Episode 46 of the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who have released the first run of the Canadian Club Invitation Series, CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask. All the hallmarks of classic Canadian Club with the added richness and sweetness of Sherry. There you are, Ray Ferraro, looking good as always. And, you know, I'm coming out of the dark side here. I've been
under the weather.
Yeah, starting to feel a little bit better. I mean, I sound like I'm pretty croaky, but, you know, that's just an indication that it's making its way through. So hopefully
You did send me a picture. I said, how are you feeling? You sent me a picture, and I was horrified. I'm like, yeah. I think he's one foot in a casket here. You look terrible. Yeah.
I know, and I didn't exaggerate. It was one of those where, you know, I just took this selfie. You and I were going back and forth, and I'm sitting in my chair watching a hockey game or whatever. And I had the ball cap on. My face is, like, hanging in my lap. I got the turkey neck. I had
it's a brutal
everything
picture.
Going. It's a terrible picture, but that's how I felt. Wonder how Jamie Noodles McLennan is feeling. We're going to find out because he's going to join us here on the Ray and Dregs podcast. Fresh back from Calgary, the Mika Kiprusoff ceremony, which was so well done by the Flames organization with all those former great Flames players, Noodles included. So he'll join us to talk about that because, man, did that look like a time with all the speeches and whatnot. It was terrific.
I don't know. I'm guessing that he's tired. That's just what I'm guessing right there. There's when that many guys get together, there's a lot of stories to tell. And and it looked terrific. And, you know, Mark Messier said that the number retirement is almost more significant than being in the Hall of Fame. And the reason being is if you look at the percentage of players that get their numbers retired, it's almost none. What an amazing, amazing accomplishment and recognition.
So, you know what we should get Ryan Rashog to do? Let's give him an off-season homework assignment. Go through every organization and come up with the list of retired numbers, right? And then cross-reference that versus the great players of the past within that organization. And then you and I, at some point in season six, can go, this organization's a bit stingy because this player should be honored in this way. I'll bet you there'd be more than you'd think when you think
you mean
of all
that should be retired.
Yeah. Like, I mean, individually, when you're looking at, okay, well, this player is in the rafters, his number has been retired. Why hasn't this player's number been retired?
I think part of it is so you don't end up with a bunch of guys wearing 74 and,
yeah, maybe
93. You know, although remember there was a time when nobody wore really over number 30. And now, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, the numbers are all over the place. I don't really care, but man, some of them just look goofy on the back of a jersey. They just don't look like you're a real player. They just look like it's a hand-on jersey.
Right. Number 34, Mika Kiprusoff.
Yep. Never worn again.
It belongs in the rafters in Calgary. And all eyes on the Calgary Flames with the deadline on Friday. So we'll pick Noodle's brain on that curious goaltending carousel, that market, and how it might develop in the days ahead. So time for headlines, Ray, brought to you by Tim Hortons. The iconic roll-up to win is back with huge, huge prizes. Now until the end of March, March 31st, you can earn one roll for each eligible purchase. Just be sure to scan for Tim's rewards before paying, or you can use the scan and pay. Every roll revealed earns an entry for a chance to win a Tim's Financial $10,000 daily jackpot prize. This is huge stuff. So for the full list of prizes and all of the details, all of the contest information, please visit rolluptowin.ca. Tough news within the organization of the New Jersey Devils to lead off headlines. And I don't know why I was surprised by this. Maybe because of the timing, Lindy Ruff let go as head coach of the New Jersey Devils. Seventh NHL head coach fired this season, Ray. Travis Green assumes the job on an interim basis. And the reason I'm surprised is because of where the Devils sit in the Eastern Conference. And it's not like Tom Fitzgerald woke up, you know, Sunday morning and said, you know what, I got to fire Lindy. enough is enough. I've got to fire him. I mean, when you get to that point as general manager, as an organization, ownership included, where you're firing a coach you just extended, you've been thinking about this for a while. And is it a little bit too late for Greener to come in and try and turn things around?
Well, it's certainly not much road left for Travis Green. I look at this a little bit like, although Travis has just been named the interim coach, you know, he was brought in over the summer when Andrew Burnett left to become the head coach in Nashville. And Bruno was there basically as the next on coach whenever Lindy was going to retire or step down or this, you know, get fired, that they would have a coach in place. And, you know, Vancouver did it last year. They were pretty much out of it. They fired Bruce Boudreau. They brought in Rick Tocchet and basically had a 2.5 month training camp and, you know, positioned themselves to, you know, to have a better start this year, that you weren't going through systems and all that junk in training camp. You were, you know, you're on the fly doing it this year or last year at this time. And so perhaps that's what Fitzgerald's thinking in New Jersey. I did a game there with the Devils, I'm going to say a couple of weeks ago, and there just felt like an uneasiness around the team. Yeah. And look, not all of this is Lindy Ruff's fault. I mean, their goaltending stinks. It's terrible. If you look at the coaches that have got fired this year, their goaltending almost across the board is in the bottom third of the league for sure, but like in the bottom 10. It's just bottom eight. It's just been, it's brutal. So you can't overcome that. They can't overcome a loss of Dougie Hamilton, losing Jack Hughes for 2 months. But there is, I thought that they, had they not won that first round series last year against the Rangers, like if you remember, they got blasted in games 1 and 2 at home. And they went to Akira Schmid in game 3 and somehow won the series in game 7. If they lose that series, I think they probably make a move in the summer. I mean, that's just my gut feel.
Yeah,
they didn't. And so they extend them by 1 year. You know, Fitzy and Lindy Ruff go way back to the Florida Panther days. So, you know, some of it was a reward of last year. Maybe there's some loyalty in there as well.
Sure.
But now it's Travis Green. And I don't know. It seems like they're too far back. And one of the reasons it seems it's too far back is, new coach or not, they still got the same goalies.
Yeah, yeah.
And until that's fixed, I just don't see a clear path forward for them.
Right. Speaking of coaching, Ray, let's dive into a game from last night. And that's the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Jim Montgomery of the Bruins has not been at all happy with the play of his team over the last, dozen or so games?
I mean, four, 5-4 coming in last night.
Yeah. So, you know, a level of inconsistency that we didn't really see. You know, I mean, they had a terrific start, you know, all the way through the midpoint of the regular season. Yeah, every team has a blip where you lose a game here that you shouldn't have lost. Anyway, last dozen or so games, they've been wildly inconsistent. So he gives that chain a yank, tightens it up, and they were ready to play the Maple Leafs last night in Toronto. Toronto was not ready to start. Tough start. So you've got the hunger of the Bruins that the Maple Leafs couldn't match. So does a game like that tell you anything from Brad Treliving's perspective, or is that just reading too much into it because we know there's a deadline on Friday? He made a deal to acquire a piece he needed, a right-shot D-man in Ilya Lyubushkin. So we know he's going to continue to have trade talks, do everything he can do. But do you watch a game like that and just try and piece it apart and go, well, how can you not be ready to play? How can there not be a response to a team that you know is hungry? Does that factor in to his psyche, you think, as a general manager? Maybe he sits tight?
I guess it could. But I find that there's so much reactionary stuff right now around the league. I don't mean in Toronto. I just mean around the league. A team loses a game that you think they should play, like last night, should play well. And, you know, the pendulum swings way over here. They play 3 good games and you're like, oh no, this is the team they are. But you forget the previous 40 games.
Yeah.
Like, I think no matter what the immediacy of the day tells you, you've got to look at the biggest picture if you're the manager. So back when the Bruins were out of the gate, I think they were, man, they were, I don't know, 8-0 or something or other. You know, they had an amazing start. And Jim Montgomery said, yeah, the reason we're here is because of our goaltending. It's not because we've played particularly well. The Bruins have, just like the Leafs, they have obvious holes, like very transparent holes that you can see. And so they're able to mask some of theirs by goaltending. The Leafs have had a really good run here. They've, you know, you can say, oh, some of their competition wasn't so great, but you still got to play the games. You can only play the team that's across from you. That becomes one of the bigger challenges when you look into the playoffs, is you play the same team over and over. You don't get an easy night. Like, that's not there, right? You're not playing a team that's like Arizona had lost 11 in a row at the time or whatever it was. You don't get those, right? So if you're asking to the – I don't think that game changes or shouldn't change the Leafs' view of what they want to do. Here's the big question. I mean, it's obvious their defense isn't good enough, right? Mm-hmm. So does one defenseman fix that, or do you need multiple? Now, let's go back to Lyubushkin. I mean, he's a third pair guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, are you going to go at another third pair guy? Like, unless you can make a significant trade, like a significant upgrade, what's the point? Why pitch another asset onto the, you know, on the out the door pile?
Right.
There's three components to a trade. Every trade's the same. It starts with need. What does the team need? Then you look and you go, is there availability? What's the availability of that need? And the third thing is, do we have any assets for it? Need, availability, assets. And when you go down the list, you can see the need. Availability's pretty thin. Like, everybody's looking for the same thing. Gee, right shot D?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, everybody's looking for the same thing. And then you get to the assets, and they don't have many. They don't have many tradable assets. It's like, no. I keep hearing this thing about, oh, you know, Tampa, they'll pull a rabbit out of their hat. What are they going to trade?
Yeah.
Now, they might. They might come up with something. They have no picks. They have no young guys necessarily in their prospect system that they can afford to pitch out the door. It's like the Leafs. You either you have assets or you don't. To deal with the need that you have.
Yeah. No, that's right. And, you know, that first round draft pick, is it in play? Well, it's only in play for a specific ad. I mean, Toronto has tried long and hard to shore up the weaknesses and whatnot. They did that with Kyle Dubas. They continue to do that with Brad Treliving. I mean, Adam Larson's name has been thrown out there, which will take us to the next topic, by the way. Of course, Toronto would trade their first-round pick for a package that included Adam Larson or even Borgen out of Seattle. Those players aren't available, and Larson doesn't want to leave Seattle. So, you know, we'll continue to monitor this.
You know who didn't want to trade Adam Larson? Ken Holland.
You're right. Yeah.
And, you know, Larson had a terrible circumstance where his father passed away in Edmonton and just felt he needed a new start. And so they were certainly respectful of that. But Adam Larson's good and
really
he's
good.
Big. And he seems like since he's gone to Seattle, he's kind of unlocked a little bit of his, a little bit more of an offensive look to his game.
Yeah.
Of course, teams are going to call about him. And of course, Ron Francis is going to tell them to take a lap, or he's going to give them a price that they're going to all choke on. And I mean, he's a really good player, and he's much better, by the way. I know Will Borgen's name got thrown out, but Borgen's not the player that Larson is. Right. Not even close.
And Larson was a free agent signing, right? In Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason I link him, and it isn't to ongoing speculation with the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, you and I have been going back and forth via text on some sketchy hits that we've seen, some sketchy plays. And Larson was victimized by one of those from Pospisil last night in that Calgary-Seattle game. It looked like a charge. It wasn't called. And then eventually Pospisil does get tagged with a major penalty on a hit on Vince Dunn of Seattle Kraken. So To me, tensions are high across the league. That's not unusual for this time of year. Yeah, there's the deadline on Friday. Then you've got the playoffs right around the corner. So sensitivity is at an extreme level. So talk about that play. You had the Josh Manson slash to the hand wrist of Connor Bedard, which to me is targeting, right? Like, what are you doing? You're not just trying to let him know you're there. You know, you're that was a good whack. It wasn't the worst thing we've ever seen, but yeah, it was a good solid slash. The Matt Rempe charge on Ilya Lyubushkin in his first game with the Maple Leafs. I mean, he's 6'8" and change and borderline left his feet. Again, a penalty that wasn't called. I'm not piling on the officials. What I'm asking is, how would you manage this? Is there an old school philosophy that should be employed here?
Well, there's really two ways to manage this. Number one is the ever confusing rule book. You could actually call the penalties that are in it. I think the charging penalty is the least utilized, most effective way to take out a lot of these hits. If you don't like the hits, call the charge. Because when Matt Rempe hits somebody without leaving his feet, he's 245 pounds. Like, people are going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And if you allow him a 20-foot run-up, it's like a truck with no brakes coming down a hill. Like, the power and speed that he can accumulate, people are going to get hurt. And the number one way, and to the Manson slash on Bedard, the number one way is the rule book. Call it. Yeah. Call a few of them to start with, and people will take notice. When a player leaves his feet, there should be no second guess as to whether that's a penalty or not. Now, the thing is, there'll always be hits that we don't like, because you can tell somebody there's a penalty attached to it and they still might do it anyway. But then you whack them with a major penalty. Kick them out of the game. Like, if you watch the Larson hit by Pospisil, he shouldn't have been in position to make the hit on Dunn. Like, right. That's a brutal hit.
Yeah.
Look at how close Larson is to a significant injury with that hit. And he came from across the ice. I know the rule says if you come more than a certain distance with your feet moving, but a player can get going and coast the last 10 feet in and he's flying. Like, literally going upwards of 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Just think of get in your car. If you want to know what it feels like, get in your car, drive 15 miles an hour into a brick wall and see how you feel.
See how you feel.
Because that's what the hit is. The old school way is when Connor Bedard gets slashed, is one of the Blackhawks tough guys skates over to Nate MacKinnon and says, the next time that one of you guys do that to Bedard, we're going to chase you around for the rest of the night. And then MacKinnon goes to Manson and says, you know what? Don't.
Yeah.
Like, that's really the old school way, is that there's no point going up to the guy that did it. He already did it once. He's probably courageous enough to do it again. Go to the guy that is the best player and tell him, if he does that to our best player, you're not going to have very much fun tonight. It's amazing. I know that there'll be a portion of people that watch the games that say, oh, that's Neanderthal. Yes, correct. It is.
Yeah.
But it's a way to stop it.
Yeah.
And if we want to stop it, you got to stop it.
Right. Your original point, and we'll wrap up headlines with this, Ray. I always put the onus back on the general managers because, you know, you're an analyst who's earned a strong opinion. You do umpteen games a year, all that. You see it all front row seat firsthand. But when it gets out into the media, aside from opinion, well, that's coming from general managers, right? So the general managers can fix it. You know how? The GM meetings are coming up here in mid-March. And Stephen Wacom, who's the director of officiating, will make a presentation. George Parros, Department of Player Safety, will make a presentation. So managers, spool up those visuals, right? Yeah. Show those clips and say, we can't have this. Why isn't that a charge? Why wasn't that a penalty called? And if Stephen Watkins can defend, then say, well, we can't have that in our game because good players are going to get injured. It's going to cost us money and all of those things. So we need to tighten up on this. That's how ultimately it gets changed. And Watkins and Peros are open to that, but they need the marching orders from the GMs.
Well, I don't get why and how the GMs wouldn't want to present this. I mean, because it's going to happen to their player eventually.
Sure. Yeah.
Like if it goes unchecked, like how is it not going to come around to your backyard?
Yeah. I mean, look, there are missed calls in every game. That's part of the judgment that's being
not
an official.
Hey, that's not it. Yeah. It's the, I think if the directive came down, we're going to lock in on charging.
Yeah.
And they start calling one or two a game for 2 weeks. Like we're not talking about 2 years. It's finished. No. And then they're going to say to Matt Rempe, among others, hey, Matt, you can't hit like that because every time you do, you end up over there in the penalty box.
Yeah.
And then Peter Laviolette's going to say, I can't put you on the ice if you end up in the penalty box. And then Matt Rempe's going to go, you know what? I like the NHL and I'm going to figure out a different way to do it. He will.
Agreed.
He will. Players adjust. And I'm telling you, I've told this story a million times. They never used to call holding, right? In the defensive zone. I'm playing in Hartford. I'm 160 pounds. All of a sudden, Peter Stastny shows up. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with Peter Stastny? Like, I can't check him. So I figured if I had my hand on his stick, so that's three hands on the stick, it's not going to work. And then the ref would yell, that's holding, let go. So I'd let go. I'd skate two more strides and grab on again. Until they called it, you kept doing it. Yeah. So why would these guys change until somebody says, it's a penalty and you're going to lose your ice time? That's perfect. The connection.
Agreed. I mean, that's the way to get it done. All right, those are your headlines. Thank you to Tim Hortons.
Ready to roll? All right, let's roll.
Whoa, I'm rolling in it.
Play the 60th anniversary edition of Roll Up to Win on the Tim's app today.
Our interviews on Ray and Dregs brought to us by Canadian Club Whiskey, who have introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask.
Go get
signature it. Signature CC Classic 12-year-old delicious whiskey, finished with a secondary aging in Oloroso Sherry Casks. All right, well, he's just back from Calgary, and what a night, what a weekend in recognition of the outstanding career of Mika Kiprusoff. There's Jamie McLennan of Overdrive and TSN hockey analyst joining us here on the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast. And you don't have to take us through the days, the hours, the marathon shifts that you put in with Mika and company, but man, did that look like a good time on the weekend, Noodles.
It was. And, you know, it started, I got in on Wednesday. I called a game on Tuesday in Nashville. Mika had arrived on Monday with his family. So as guys started to filter in, I think that's the, you know what, if we had just one night out, if we were like, okay, let's all meet Wednesday night and we'll be good. And then we'll see you again Saturday. But it was in on Wednesday. Let's take it easy. That ends up in a runaway. Thursday, more guys filter in. Jerome lands. It's like, yeah, let's go for a dinner, quiet night. Doesn't end up that way. Friday, Dion Phaneuf lands. Rhett Warner's there every night. All of a sudden, it's just, and then you basically got to get to the event on Saturday. And, you know, everyone, Marty Jelena, you name it, Matt Stajan and Curtis Glencross. Like, it was just great to see everybody. And obviously, Mika, you know, it was a great week for him. He's a very, he's a recluse. He's a quiet guy. And he really embraced it. Like, instead of being afraid of it, he went the other way and just said, you know what? Probably going to be the last a lot of people are going to see of me for another 20 years. So I might as well embrace it.
Noodles, we had talked over the last little bit about when they first wanted to present Mika with the honor. And getting a hold of him is not exactly a walk in the park, is it?
No, I mean... You know, the Flames know that I'm basically the only guy who answers my calls or my texts, right? Everybody else is like, for some reason, he will get back to them, but it's like months later. Like, it's not joking. anything. So, you know, he's not one of those guys who's glued to a smartphone or anything like that. He loves to hunt. He goes up to his, he has one cabin. I don't think that has internet and might not even have power. I'm not sure. I would never go there. You know, me and Buck from the outdoors. So, so I get a call from Peter Hanlon, the vice president of the Flames and vice president of communications, and said, listen, we got to get a hold of Mika and it's kind of urgent. And of course he's flushing our calls. So any chance you can get a hold of him. So I shot him a text and said, hey, I got to get a hold of you. And I call him and he's like, what's up, Noodla? And I'm like, hey, have you seen all these calls? He's like, yeah, I don't know what that is. Let me know. And I'm like, well, answer and they will tell you. Because Peter's like, you know, can we tell him? You don't need to tell him. And I said, absolutely. So he goes, he says to me, he goes, well, what's it about? And I said, well, I can't tell you. And he goes, well, then I'm not answering the phone. So he goes, I'm going to wait 1 month until I answer the phone. And I said, don't, like, and so I ended up talking him into answering the call. And he was quite moved. He called me back and he said, like, what a great honor. And it was very cool for his son, Aro, who's 18 years old, to see it. His son, Oscar, who was just a baby when Mika, finished his career. So it was good for his family to be, kind of there for it and kind of witness it, because he was joking, saying, like, you know, none of my family really believes I played hockey because they kind of all just go about and do their own thing. So it was pretty awesome to get a hold of him and make this happen.
There was several stories you guys told, and you told in particular in your speech, but one of them that I loved was somebody was looking for his number.
Yeah.
And what was his answer there?
So that was just recently too, because people have been reaching out. Some guys who get invited to it can't make it. So they're like, hey, give me Mika's number and I want to shoot him a text. So one of the coaches from past like sent me a note going, hey, give me Mika's number. I want to send him a text. So I text Mika and I said, hey, you know, this guy's looking for your number. And he writes back 34.
So good, man.
And then I tried calling him and he flushed my call and sent a picture of himself. He was in a tree hunting birds and he said, it's minus 15. I'm freezing my ass off. I'm in a tree by myself. And he had gone up northern Finland and was hunting birds by himself, and he couldn't answer because it would scare the birds off. But he was texting me and you know, joking as usual. He's got such a great, amazing sense of humor.
When you were playing with him, you have told us before that, like, you'd look at him and go, yeah, I couldn't do that. Like, that, no chance. When you think of the guys you've played with and the guys you saw in our generation, was there anybody really better at their peak?
The guy I think of is Hasek, because I did get to play against Hasek. And that guy, there was a night I played against Buffalo and I was with the Islanders. Ray, you might have played that game. We played at the Target Center in Minneapolis, a neutral site game, and we tied 2-2. And I remember Pierre Turgeon taking a slap shot from the hash marks, and Hasek just caught it like he was just picking a fly out of the air. I was like, what the hell was that? And I remember like watching Hasek over the years going, like, this guy was a cut above. And then, you know, again, I'm biased. I was lucky I got to play with, you know, Roman Turek and Grant Fear and, you know, some really great goaltenders, Roberto Luongo. But I think a Kipper, at his best, like, he was one of the best on the planet. Like, when we think of three or four goalies in today's world, you know, it's arguably Vasilevsky or Shesterkin or Sorokin or Demko, Hellebuck, you know, Markstrom. Like, Kipper was always in that conversation. And we had a bit of a debate about it the other day. I don't know if a lot of people would know if he'd get enough Hall of Fame votes because his career was a little bit shorter. And then I made the argument, well, Cam Neely's career was shorter too.
Right.
And for me, there's two criteria to be a Hall of Famer. At some point were you known as one of the best at your craft? And Kipper checks that box. And then also, were you special? Like, did people game plan around you? And, you know, I think of the Cam Neelys and the guys who were in the Hall of Fame. For me, Kipper was one of them. Now, Matt, that might just be the biased McLennan as opposed to the objective one. But if not, he's pretty damn close. So I think there was a time, and it's funny talking to Craig Conroy and Jerome McGinley and those guys that night, Rhett Warner, Robin Regeer, that video montage they played that night, like Connie said to me, he goes, God, you remember the saves. Like he's like, you're just going back going, wow, like you're just in awe. And I know it's a highlight video, so you're not, you know, just taking routine saves, but it's just, you're watching save after save of how he was like. And it was pretty, guys had goosebumps. It was pretty crazy.
I mean, what a collection of characters that were assembled in Calgary for the weekend noodles. And, you know, for anybody who wants to check out your speech and the speeches that were part of the evening, you can do that. Compliments of the Calgary Flames, by the way, who posted all of it on the YouTube channel. But as I'm watching your speech, top shelf, no question about that. They kept cutting away to some of the people you're talking about, Iggy and the muscles in his eyebrows. And earlier in your speech, I think you're talking about how Mika Kiprusoff ended up, obviously, in Calgary. But there's a bit of a jab there, and they cut to Daryl Sutter. I mean, at any point in the weekend or on the night, did Daryl smile? Like, did he crack a smile at any point?
It was so amazing. And, you know, Rhett Warner pointed this out Saturday night. We were sitting there, and it was just Rhett, Mika, and myself, and a little later than, again, what it wanted to be. But we're just sitting there and playing some pool. And Rhett said, he goes, it was amazing to see Daryl. But he goes, I picked up one thing. So Daryl came on Saturday. He was supposed to come in on Friday, but he had some responsibilities around the farm. Apparently, like, because it was like cold, you have to bring calves in or something. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, typical Daryl. And so he comes in Saturday and he shows up just before we're all supposed to meet to go on the ice. And we're all sitting in a room. So it's, you know, Matt Stajan and Curtis Glencross, Mike Vernon, Robin Regeer, Jerome McGinley, Dion Phaneuf, like everyone except for Mika. And Daryl walked in and Rhett said, he goes, did you notice? So Daryl walked in the room, every guy pushed their seat back, stood up, and there was like a wedding line as he walked in. And Rhett said, like, the amount of respect that people still have, that guys who loved him and played for him, including myself, like, it was literally like a reception line. And Daryl walked in, he was hugging, asking about families. Like, that's one thing, as you guys would know, talking about Daryl, like, to Daryl, he remembers, like, your kid's name, you know, he remembers... He remembers things about your family. Like, you know, my dad's passed away 10 years. And he said, do you remember that time your dad came? You know, like he's that personable when he's on. Right. And so it was really good. And afterwards, so I made my speech. I took a couple, you know, one shot at him, the second one as I leave. And I'm sitting in the chair and he reaches back and in Daryl's way, he just grabs my leg and turns and gives me a nod. Like, you know, like a, you know, kind
like
of.
Like it was good.
Yeah, like did good, kid. Thing. And that's just that's Daryl in a nutshell. It was awesome. So good.
By the way, when you guys were all saying hi to him, you got to have your handshake game on with Daryl, right? Eh? Yeah. You cannot go in with a weak grip there. You're finished.
No, he'll rip your arm off and beat you over the head with it. Like what he does is he gets the arm around and he pulls you in tight, and then you know, kind of works your whole like he shakes your whole body. It's not your hand, you know. But he was handing hugs out. It was, you know what? It was great. The ovation when he walked on the ice too, I think was appropriate. You know, it's funny. It didn't end the way I'm sure everyone envisioned for Daryl, including himself in Calgary. Yeah. But, you know, looking at this team and the way they started and some struggles, you know, I think over time people are like, oh, maybe it wasn't the coach last year. You know, maybe, you know, there is some other things going on.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. I think the focus that night was perfect. The guy who brought Mika to Calgary to start that legacy had to be there.
Yeah.
So, you know, Murray Edwards was in attendance. All the owners, they were gracious with him. We were in the owner suite after. Everyone was talking. There was, you know, it wasn't, I know it was about hockey, but it was about people that night. And it was it was such a special night. And honestly, somebody pointed out it was Mika's son, Aro, who's 18. He loves Calgary. Obviously, he's like, hey, I'm legal here. I'm enjoying myself.
right.
He goes, the score ended up 3-4. He goes, because Pittsburgh was up 3-0 and Calgary stormed back. So he goes, kind of fitting. It was pretty cool the whole night.
Now, not that I would, you know, I've never spent any time around him, but I saw him on After Hours and I saw his speech. And has anyone heard him speak that much?
Never.
Like that. It was awesome. It was great.
It was what I loved about it is the timing of his speech. So he would say something and he would acknowledge, you know, Daryl, and he would turn and look at Daryl in the eyes. And then he would acknowledge Iggy, turn and looked at Iggy, you know, acknowledge Mike Vernon, a good friend and a mentor. Like, to me, it was, and it's funny, I had 10 pages and I'm flipping them and trying to keep up. And Mika had one page that was two-sided. And he had told me that his speech was written in English and in Finnish.
And on one page.
One page, but it had two sides. And his son, Aro, had gone through and, for lack of better words, kind of dumbed it down as far as the big words and stuff. Just wanted to make sure that it was clean. And Mika said, he goes, I was more nervous for that than anything else. Like he said, I just wanted to get through it. And it was great. Like, we had a luncheon on the Friday that was really... There were six of us on stage. We're taking shots at each other, having fun and telling stories and stuff. And it kind of, I said to Mika, I'm like, you got to treat it like this. Like, don't worry about the 20,000 people yelling your name. Like, treat it like a game. Just log into your speech. And we did. We had a lot of fun on the Friday at the luncheon. And then I thought his speech was brilliant. It was like, it was perfect. But we all, the over under was like, this guy's going to speak for 2 minutes and he's going to look at me and, you know, try and bring me back up or something. So I was waiting for everything, right? But it was perfect.
I did like the, I didn't, again, wouldn't realize, but the prank stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like the cut, whose jacket did he pull
Jay
the arm?
Bumister's.
Outstanding.
Ripped the arm.
Please tell.
You know how guys go on a two game road trip. They bring one suit and two shirts, right? You know, it's back to back, or it's like a, so I don't know if it was that like meal or that, where we, if we were sitting out for dinner or something, but his suit coat was sitting there and Mika ripped the arm off of it. And
of course he did. Why wouldn't he?
I don't know why, but then, so then I, you know, I'm not paying attention, but the next day, like, and of course, Mika's like, look at Bo's got no suit. Like, he just makes a comment as he walks by and he's laughing. And Bo comes onto the bus. We're flying. I think we were in Vancouver and going to Edmonton or something like that. And he's just glaring at me. He's like, you owe me, I think at that point, he's like, you owe me $1,000. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like mad at me. And and then Mika comes up after and he's like, I ripped it. It's like, I ripped the arm off his sleeve. And Bo had to go get a new suit, so because he got to go to the game in a suit, and so he had to buy a suit for the next day to go to the game with. So it was kind of funny. I'm sure Mika covered it or whatever, but it was just
But he was mad at you. Why?
Because Mika told Bo that he saw me do it. That's what it was.
See, that's the best.
It's the double prank.
The best part about it is he would always do that. He would do something. And then he would be hiding around and peeking out when all of it was going down and laughing. Like, he had this sense of humor about him where he just enjoyed it. He really enjoyed kind of being in the background and pressing buttons, kind of, you know, that's behind the curtain type of thing. And he did that. Honestly, he did that for 9 years, like as long as I can remember.
Love it.
Yeah, so much fun. Noodles, we could keep you all afternoon. Just a couple more minutes here. And obviously, the trade deadline is looming. Anything that we record is almost automatically dated, but we'll roll the dice with this one. And the goalie market. When you see, speaking of Calgary, when you see names like Markstrom, now Ullmark's name is out there with the Boston Bruins. We know there are other goaltending assets that are available. How confused are you by the goalie market and the lack of action that has taken? Lots of talk around these top-level goalies, but not a lot of action to this stage.
There is, you know, it's for me, it's on two fronts, because I could probably name you a 5-pack or 6-pack of, we could call them cup contenders.
Yeah.
That would not be 100% comfortable with their goaltending. You know, you Carolina, Toronto, LA, you know, your Colorado, like these are pretty good teams. And are they loving what they have? New Jersey, obviously, and I don't know if they're a cup contender. I think they're just struggling to make the playoffs. But that's a 5-pack of teams that look pretty good. That, and I would argue that I know Pickard played really well last night, but maybe Kenny Holland would like a little insurance there. But maybe his insurance is Jack Campbell, a guy making $5 million in the minors. But the point being is every organization that thinks that they could probably go deep into the playoffs, there might be that question mark. Is there a guy out there that could put you over the top from a stability standpoint?
Right.
And then the argument is, well, look at Aiden Hill, did it on a really good team last year. So right. maybe if you play good defense, you're going to do it by committee. Because if you're not acquiring, there's seven or eight guys that are legit, you know, Demko, the Hellebucks, the Markstrom, you know, you go right down Vasilevsky, the three Russians, all of that type of stuff. I'm missing somebody in there, you know, Ottinger, I guess you. But if you don't have a guy who plays 65 games, then everybody's kind of on the same page as to like, okay, we're going to do this by committee. That's probably the counter argument to go, well, we're going to see how it goes with what we have. But if we don't, we're going to really go after this, you know, player X in the offseason, whether it's Markstrom or Allmark or whoever is going to be available. But is it too late? You know, are you wasting? My argument for them is Jacob Markstrom's having a great season right now. He might not have a great season next year, you know, and New Jersey, is there a team that wants him right now? If they end up rolling the dice and somehow making the playoffs and one of their young kids push through, is that marketplace going to be there for him? So I think there's a lot of moving parts. But the interesting one was Allmark. Guy won the Vezina last year. You know, if he's on the outside looking in Boston, you know, I think there'd be a king's ransom for him as well.
I think when I – just listening to you talk there, Jamie, is like – so say a good team thinks they're a goalie away from being a scary team.
Yeah.
The problem becomes if you're trading – if it's not futures, you're making your team weaker to make your goalie better.
Right.
Like if, like for example, Boston's not trading Allmark for all futures. They need stuff now.
Right.
Well, then the team that they're trading Allmark to, they get worse.
Yeah.
And so I think the complication in season for goalie is more difficult almost than any other position. I don't know if you... And I'm curious if you think that way.
I agree. Unless it's a team that you believe you're trading Allmark to. Now, you correct me. Does he have a no move? Does he have some control?
Yeah, I think he's got 10 or 15, I think.
Okay. But say you're trading him to an organization that's on his list that maybe not in the playoffs hunt.
Right, right.
You know, maybe it is. And I'm not trying to start rumors, but maybe Ottawa or maybe somebody that's on the, you know, maybe Buffalo. For example, like Buffalo, you know, is on the, I think they're on the upswing, but they're not there yet. So maybe if you're acquiring a goaltender, it's for the future that can help put you over the hump. And the player that is going out, a live player, is going to help the team, going to help the Boston Bruins, going to help the Calgary Flames move on in the future. So it just depends on the team that you're trading him to and what type of stuff they have. Because you're right. If you're trading him to a contender in LA, you're grabbing a live body off LA. Yeah. So that's going to make them weaker. You're right. So it's counterproductive. But if you're trading him to a team that's trying to make the playoffs or maybe is going to be a playoff team next year, but they're on his list, then that's kind of what you look at.
Mm. All right, Noodles, we'll let you go with that, brother. We know it's been a busy several days for you. Lots of travel coming, but look forward to seeing you on Friday. Thanks for doing this.
I can't wait to hear O-Dog go, another bit piece, you know, bit piece traded for you. And then, right. And as your hockey DB and going, okay, who the hell is this guy? And,
yeah. Thanks, Noodles. Fine.
It'll be busy. Be well. Thanks, Noodles.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
And Ray, just a reminder that our next episode of the Rain Riggs Hockey Podcast will drop on Saturday, provided you're available for a full forensic review of the 2024 trade deadline. And we'll see if we have time, but hopefully we'll get into Ask Rain Riggs Anything, because I'm sure there will be some who were confused, maybe even a little miffed as to why their club didn't do what they were expecting to do. But how busy has Noodles been over the last couple of weeks? And man, maybe it was the adrenaline of coming out of Calgary and having a great time with his former teammates and his good pals, but he just bubbles with energy and positivity, doesn't he? He let's get going here.
He really does. And he had a great time, obviously, in Calgary with his boys. And then, you know, to tell some stories about Kiprasov and to have him honored, it pretty clear they're tight. I do love the fact that of the people in the Flames organization, if they need to get a hold of Kiprasov, they call Noodles, because He's the only guy that he answers the phone to. I think that's awesome. And there were some great stories. And also I liked his, the thought of how the goalie market can possibly shake out and how difficult it is in season for goalies to get traded.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we'll see. Not every goalie is going to go. I mean, just because one goes, if any goes, as we're recording here on Tuesday with the trade deadline looming, that market is still going to be interesting and valid in the offseason as well.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think of the goalies that got traded in season. Remember when St. Louis traded for Ryan Miller?
Yeah.
And they were really good. And the thought was, well, Miller can – this is a difference maker, and it just didn't work. And he talked about later on about like how different it was, different system, different style, different conference, all those things that made the adjustment in season really difficult for the goalie.
All right. Thank you, Noodles. Appreciate that. And what's the week look like for you, my friend? Again, we're going to get into our next episode on Saturday, just to give us a fighting chance to take you through everything that went on Friday and the deadline.
Yeah, I'm actually home all week, which is awesome. And then I fly to Boston on Saturday. And will be interesting. So when we do this, the recap, I'll be in Boston. Deadline will be over. Penguins and Bruins. What do you think those two teams are going to look like on Saturday?
Well, one's going to look much different, and that would be Pittsburgh for sure.
Yeah, and so I usually do all my lineup stuff the day before. I'm probably going to hold off. I'm going to end up with a lot of whiteout and all that stuff on there, because that's going to be a big change to, and an interesting change in Pittsburgh for sure. And we'll see what Boston can get done too.
Yeah, I mean, they're eager. There's no doubt about that, and they should be. I mean, they're in a playoff spot, so. They want to improve in any way they can. For me,
Oh, I know. You're on the phone. You got that thing stuck to your head till Friday, do you not?
I mean, gargling salt water and tapping out text messages. That's what I've got going for the next few days leading up to the deadline. That's
a big week, man. That's going to be fun. Yeah, you'll enjoy it.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to the deadline and checking in with you on Saturday from Boston.
Yep. Have a good week. Feel better. And thanks for listening, everybody.
You bet. Thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs, our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and our good friends at Tim Hortons. And yes, thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating, and for following us on our Ray and Dregs YouTube channel as well. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.